Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who has rendered uncommon service in this war for the free world over a number of decades now is our first guest. His name is Colonel John Mills, United States Army retired. He has a background of distinguished service as a special operator with a specialty in psychological warfare operations. He also served as a civilian in senior positions in the Secretary of Defense's office after leaving the Army. These days, he is, among other things, a member of the Committee on the Present Danger, China, and hard at work on ensuring that we continue to remain free and safe in a very dangerous world. And we wanted to catch up with John to talk with him a bit about his take on the testimony that has been given by senior military officers, both in a civilian capacity, in the case of the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, and in a military capacity, specifically that of the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Mark Milley, and the Commander of Central Command, General Frank McKenzie. John, it's so good to have you back, especially for a time such as this. Thank you for joining us, sir.
Good morning, Frank. Thank you so much. Always an honor to be with you.
The honor is ours, truly, John, and I'm anxious to hear your takeaway from the testimony that has been provided by these general officers, in one case now retired, but serving in a civilian role, and the two that are still in uniform, in their appearances before the Senate Armed Services Committee day before yesterday and in the House Armed Services Committee yesterday. The subject was supposed to be, and I think predominantly was, Afghanistan and their involvement in what is now seemingly, I think, unmistakably a strategic defeat of the First Order there. And some other issues came up as well. John, give us your take on both, if you would.
Yeah, Frank, I don't know where to begin. I thought what we saw as congressional testimony was some of the most disturbing under oath presentations we have seen in decades. And I think that most media doesn't get it or understand what just happened. It was a robotic response, especially with Milley, but McKenzie also, essentially obfuscating. It was a synchronized swim of obfuscation. I've never personally given testimony like that in front of Congress. But I prepared it and backseated on a number of occasions to formal testimony with my bosses in the Office of Secretary of Defense, even supported Keith Alexander, Commander of Cyber Command, eventually Commander of Cyber Command, and Derns, the Director of NSA. What we saw was robotic, was evasive, was intentionally, I would say, almost misleading. Milley continuously avoided any specific questions and essentially asserted privilege. I think he was really referring to Goldwater Nichols from 1986, which established DOD is a civilian-led agency and further codify the role of the chairman and their relationship to the president of the SecDef. But it was disturbing, it was dark, and robotic. Very concerning.
Those are important insights into the sort of atmospherics of it, John, but let's talk a little bit about the substance. One of the things that struck me about Milley's testimony concerning Afghanistan was his comment to the Senate Armed Services Committee that it was too early to tell whether the American people were more at risk as a result of what has happened in Afghanistan. He said it would take 6 months more. You're a professional military officer. You've been in combat. You've taken measure of the enemy that we're up against. Is it not abundantly clear to you how much greater is our danger today, or at least that we are more at risk as a result of how this has played out?
Yes, Frank. A key imperative back when Tommy Franks was commander of Central Command, not McKenzie, back when somebody named Don Rumsfeld was Secretary of Defense, the key imperative for Afghanistan, the key strategic imperative was two words, deny sanctuary. Deny sanctuary. We have spent 20 years of blood and treasure denying sanctuary, and we just did an about face and gave sanctuary to worldwide extremist elements to assemble, gather, organize, train, and equip, a key military mission. We just ceded, surrendered that back to these extremist elements. Most are Islamic associated, but there's others. And we gave China a land bridge to the energy they desperately need. So this was insanity. 20 years of blood and treasure. We just surrendered. And Milley says, too early to tell. What in the bloody world is going on here? He knows exactly what happened.
It is patently obvious, I think, John, as you say, that not only have we given sanctuary and sort of the abstract, it's being taken advantage of already, and not just by the Taliban, obviously, but there's evidence of Al-Qaeda and the Islamic State, not just so-called ISIS-K, but the other elements of it, the Haqqani Network, and heavens knows who else among the international global jihad movement that are also taking advantage of this, to say nothing of all of those who are being inspired or emboldened or otherwise enabled to renew, intensify, and, you know, compound the dangers that we face from that quarter alone. And that's without even getting into, you know, what the other threats that we're confronting, notably from the Chinese Communist Party, are taking away from all of this. So it seems to me it's not just, as I said in the commentary today, John, that Milley's comments that it'll take 6 more months to sort this out are wrong. It's that they are delusional. Would you disagree?
Yes, this is patently obvious. The Pentagon, the place where we had giants and legends stride the hallways that secured America, secured the free world, Marshall, Eisenhower, and I give a hat tip to Don Rumsfeld, but in giants of American history, and then this is where we're at. I don't know whether Afghanistan, it's too early to tell. This is dangerous. We have now a mortal threat with our senior uniform leaders, and I have to be careful because I am a retired officer. They have said there's been a number of comments, I would say essentially threatening retirees. Never seen anything like this about being recalled to active duty, which does happen. There's a number of general officers and admirals that have been recalled to active duty for horrible crimes that they committed. But there's this threatening nature. And I'll never forget looking through Dick Clark after the initial success, which took a little bit of time in Afghanistan. And I was one of the key planners of the very early days of Afghanistan. And then I went to from Central Command to the Joint Staff to the Special Operations Division of the J3 to work a longer term campaign in Afghanistan and worldwide. Next target was Yemen. But worldwide, and I never will forget looking through Dick Clark's plans, requests for plans from the 90s, where over and over again, this person named Dick Clark, who, like him or not, was a visionary on several topics, and during the 90s, during the Clinton years, was running around shouting Osama, and we couldn't, and nobody could figure out what he was talking about. And he asked the Pentagon over and over for these plans to strike the training camps in Afghanistan. And it was at the time, nobody understood totally what Dick Clark was talking about. But these plans were presented over and over again back to the White House at the request of Dick Clark, a key national security advisor. He saw the danger of allowing sanctuary. Nothing, very little happened with Clinton. And now we're back to that point where we now have just enabled a worldwide threat, a mortal threat to us. Unbelievable.
The bigger concern, though, I have is that it's been combined in the intervening period with perception, and I don't think it's a misplaced perception, that the Taliban have actually defeated the United States. And for that matter, its NATO allies as well. So it's not just a matter of, as I said, you know, giving them sanctuary. It's not just a matter of them now being able to operate with impunity from Afghanistan, as well as I think probably in a lot of other places besides. But I mean, you're a guy who's specialized in psychological warfare. What are the implications of this in terms of the psychology and the esprit de corps, if you will, the confidence that those who believe that Sharia tells them they will prevail, that Allah will give them the ultimate victory. Can it possibly be other than that they are now further emboldened to believe that jihad worldwide can be undertaken with considerable success?
Yeah, absolutely. Here, our senior military leader, the one the whole country is dependent upon, General Milley, has just gone against the tenet of warfare, whether you want to say Clausewitz or Sun Tzu. He essentially surrendered, walked our forces off the field, and said, big deal, who cares, and treats this unbelievable debacle and defeat as if it was a bad parallel parking job and not a big deal. Unbelievable. This is the one America and the free world depends upon, General Milley. And he has denied, and he articulates this sophistication that he reads all these things, and yet he just threw Clausewitz, Sun Tzu in the garbage can, says, big deal, we're just going to walk away. You guys have it. What?
John, let me turn to China, because as I said, you're a member of the Committee on the Present Danger of China. You've thought hard and worked assiduously to protect our country against China. One of the things that I think came out in the testimony is that the alleged call, one of apparently many, between the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States, General Mark Milley, and his, I guess he's his Chinese counterpart, at least he's the top military officer, but in the case of General Li, he seems to be actually in the chain of command, which I don't think is the case under our law for General Milley, but he nonetheless regards him as his counterpart, and he certainly has been interacting with him. But it's been reported by Bob Woodward and Bob Costa, conversation in February in which he promised his Chinese interlocutor that in the event the United States decided to go to war, attack China, that he personally would call General Li and tell him that attack was underway. I've never heard of such a thing on the part of an American military officer. And I think if it were actually the case that it happened, it would be considered to be a traitorous act, one that would warrant a court-martial. He seems to be blithely more or less acknowledging that that conversation happened. He tries to put it into a slightly more benign context. But what are your thoughts on, first of all, the actual character of that conversation and then its implication?
We have a James Comey in uniform who is giddy and giggly with excitement over his raw power and his ability to disregard elected and appointed officials over him and the interests of the United States. Calls from the chairman and I my beloved joint staff that I spent years on and was the pinnacle, the Mount Olympus of military staffs in human history, and now we're at this. It is absolutely, yes, the right thing to do for the chairman to conduct calls with their counterparts. However, the rub in the issue is the exact language, exact mannerisms, exact translations. And I've worked these from a variety of angles very closely. I've been with generals, admirals, and done it myself on these incredibly important confidence building activities with strategic partners that we want to encourage and exhort, and potential, not just competitors, but potential adversaries, and to manage that, handle that, you operate in any form of a flippant way in which, with a nod and a grin and a foot stomp, that the chairman has their back, but not America's back, is unbelievable. Now, I have not reviewed, and I've done thousands of translations and reviewed thousands of translations and work. I've had dozens of translators working very, very important translations. And you can have a team of five highly qualified foreign nationals who are native speakers to work on a key translation, oral or written, and you'll come up with 10 interpretations. So this is not an exact science. It's an art form. And we need to know more. Supposedly, this has been released, but it's yes. Chairman should be doing this. Exact language, tone, and delivery are critically important.
John, thank you again. Come back to us soon if you would. Next up, we'll speak with Todd Benzman about another front in this war for the free world, one that we're also losing, I think, critically, and that is the border. That and more with Todd Benzman right after this.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley has informed Congress that it's, quote, too early to tell, unquote, whether the American people are safer as a result of the humiliating strategic defeat in Afghanistan that Joe Biden engineered with his help. He says, we'll know in 6 months. Those statements aren't simply wrong, they're delusional. The Biden bug out of Afghanistan has created a terrorist superstate in which domestic and foreign Sharia supremacists enjoy a sanctuary to engage in jihad worldwide. They obtained an immense arsenal, are murdering their opponents with impunity, and are emboldened to do the same to the rest of us. In short, we're in far greater danger than we were prior to Biden's presidency, let alone his Afghan surrender. And the only thing that will be even more clear in 6 months is that General Milley cannot safely be in charge of anything. This is Frank Gaffney.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
We're back and joined by one of my favorite guests. His name is Todd Benzman. He is a heroic investigative journalist and analyst and national security practitioner who currently works with the indispensable Center for Immigration Studies. He is the author of a terrific book, America's Covert Border War, talking about the Islamists at the gate and the failure to address that problem adequately. And he has been spending a prodigious amount of time on the border, on the other side of the border, and on this side, reporting about and assessing damage that is being done to our country as a result of Joe Biden's decision essentially to eliminate our southern border. Todd Benzman, it's great to have you back at Secure Freedom Radio. We're always delighted to visit with you, even if the news you impart is often a bit disheartening, I have to say. We appreciate so much your coverage of it. Welcome back, sir.
Good to be here. Sorry to depress, but that's the way it is.
We do a bit of that on this program, I'm sorry to say, but what is happening here is really depressing, especially since it seems to be entirely a self-inflicted wound. Before we get into some of the particulars that you've been covering brilliantly lately at CIS.org, Todd, just sort of level set with us. You were warning before Joe Biden was elected president, and certainly in the months after he became the president-elect, that there was going to be a Biden effect. Talk about what that entails and how it's turned out, those predictions.
Sure. Well, I like to think that I understand the immigrant mind because I interviewed so many of them and I spent so much time with them. And as the campaign, the presidential campaign was ramping up and was underway, I was listening to the Democratic campaign promises about what they were going to do on the border. And I understood that I wasn't the only one hearing this. The entire world of aspiring migrants were listening to very closely and packing their bags. So it was I'd like to say I was really brilliant in predicting this, but it was really so obvious that there was going to be a really huge mass migration surge for people to come and reap the rewards that were being promised by the Biden administration, even before it entered office. And the very first thing that the Biden administration did on day one was implement those things. And so they came.
In vast numbers. And the numbers have only grown with the months since Joe Biden took the presidency. Give us a sense, if you can, Todd, as to how many illegal aliens have made that migration successfully across our southern border since January 20th, 2021.
Right. So we're looking at once the September numbers come in, which is the last month of the fiscal year, if it come in above 170,000, and they've been easily hitting 212,000, 215,000 apprehensions, that's just the ones we know about, we will then have the highest numbers on record in American history. There'll be about 1.7, 1.8 million people would have been encountered in some fashion or form at the U.S. southern border in one single fiscal year. We're looking at 200 plus thousand a month, 50,000 a week. Whole, you know, medium-sized American cities are entering over the border every single month. This is absolutely unprecedented. It is a major national crisis at the border, in my estimation. So the people that are coming across, it used to be Mexicans and Central Americans mostly, but what we're seeing, and it, with a small percentage, maybe 2 or 3% of people from around the world, people from around the world now make up 27%. Of all of those monthly apprehension numbers. That means people who are not from Central America or Mexico, they're from the Middle East, Pakistan, Afghanistan, Syria, Iraq, Iran, and all those places, as well as, you know, Haiti and other South American countries, but places from, you know, all over Africa as well. I mean, all really, the entire world is coming now through the Darien Gap.
Let me ask you about this condition question. There has been talk that these folks from all over the world are bringing diseases from all over the world with them as well. And some of those are, you know, mumps and the various other diseases native to their lands. Some of them apparently are strains of the COVID virus as well. What are you hearing in terms of the assessment of the public health implications of this, well, invasion of our country?
Right. Well, you mentioned a couple of them that are, I think, are fairly commonly known. They're bringing in measles and mumps. I've heard of other kinds of diseases that we have vanquished long ago. I'm not that familiar with much more than the COVID right now, because that's a policy matter, that a very urgent concern around the country about, you know, the policy prescriptions that we place on Americans. You know, mandatory, you're fired if you're a federal employee and you don't get the vaccine and things like that. But the administration, yeah, our health workers, you know, I had a Border Patrol agent call me yesterday asking if I could direct him to a law enforcement job with a state agency, because he's about to get fired because he won't get vaccinated because he's afraid of it. But in any case, that's really what's happening, is there's a complete double standard. They don't care if tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands of immigrants are let into the country for having COVID, which undermines their whole claim that they care about what Americans have or get or are exposed to. It's absurd. They don't really care if they're letting in all these immigrants without being tested. Like, I can't even get on an airplane into the United States unless I can show a negative test.
Yeah, well, it may soon be that you can't get in the country unless you show a positive vaccination as well. That's the next step. But that's not being, of course, applied to these illegal aliens. And I guess it's not altogether a surprise, given that the impetus behind this Biden effect, if you will, seems to be, Todd Bensman, that they want to change our electorate, that fair numbers of these migrants seemingly are being deposited in red states, as they're called, or red districts, at least. Is that the case? And if so, would you seem to conclude that that's for the purpose, indeed, of influencing our political system and outcomes?
You know, I respect that as a theory. It's neither proven nor unproven, that idea. I certainly wouldn't be surprised if there was, you know, at least secret happiness, you know, in the Democratic ranks that it's happening.
I think it's not
but
so
I
secret.
Really,
it seems to be right. Pretty much the party line.
But I'm thinking that it really may have more to do with internal party politics, because the Joe Biden of today is certainly on immigration is certainly not the Joe Biden of yesteryear on immigration and even the Democratic Party. I mean, Obama enforced the law by and large and didn't try to do anything like what's happening here. I think what's happening is that the kind of Bernie Sanders, you know, wing, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party is in ascendance. It holds tremendous sway, and that those people want unimpeded mass migration over the border because it's feel good. They feel like they're blacks and Latinos and we're not racist. We're going to show you how not racist we are. And they're anti-police and anti-badge. They regard Border Patrol and ICE as Nazis and evil. And, you know, it's inhumane to say to an incoming immigrant, you can't come in. That's cruel to say you can't come in, where every other country in the world does this normally. Just a crazy ideology of multiculturalism that just holds power in that party right now. And they have to kowtow to it, or the coalition breaks up.
I'm not sure whether
that's my theory.
A more benign explanation, or whether it actually is kind of part and parcel of the other. But either way, this is very troubling, that the impetus behind this seems to be not the national security interests of the United States, or even the economic security interests of the United States, but these other considerations and factors. Todd, let me ask you specifically about a problem that has burst on the scene in the past couple of weeks. You've reported it intensively and really brilliantly, I think, namely the subset of the larger invasion that has been an invasion of people who originally came from Haiti. It's not clear how many of them recently came from Haiti, but they wound up in the Del Rio section of the border with Texas, the Mexican border with Texas. You've done some thoughtful reflection on what this whole saga has told us about the crisis that we're having at the moment and the implications of it. Give us sort of your sense of the takeaways, as you put it, from the migrant camp crisis under the bridge in Del Rio.
Sure. And I'll try to be a lot quicker than my pieces on this in CIS.org. Two things. One is the Biden invoking the repatriation flight to home countries option. They started flying Haitians back. That had a very powerful, visible, deterring effect on the ground. It stopped cold any further importation of people into that camp for the length of time that it was used. And they knew it would work. It's a Trump card right from the deck to do that sort of thing. And I think that if that repatriation threat, I mean, thousands fled the camp and went into Mexico to hide from it. And thousands more who were on the way stopped in their tracks over this thing. And only a few thousand actually got deported. But that's all it takes, a small number with a credible threat. Were that policy to ever be trotted out again for other nationalities and extended along the entire border, we would end this crisis immediately. The second takeaway is the relationship with Mexico. Mexico is obviously key. When Trump was in office, he threatened Mexico with trade tariffs. He took a stick in his diplomacy. The Biden administration went bunny rabbit in its diplomacy. And as a result, the Mexicans slapped him in the face with a glove, you know, a proverbial glove. They had these Haitians bottled up in their southern provinces, and they were fighting with them. They were having open clashes all over the streets. And finally, they just gave up and said, you know what, just go ahead. We're going to let you all go. And they did on September 12th for the El Grito national holiday in Mexico, which is kind of like their independence week of celebrations. They had this deal with the Biden administration to keep them up, bottled up down there. And they just said, forget you. We're letting them all through. The Biden administration needs to put stick in its diplomacy for the future. One thing that, if I have a minute left, midweek, there something happened. A phone call was made that had some stick in it, because the Mexicans suddenly reversed course and began deporting Haitians to Haiti themselves, rounding up the Haitians along the Del Rio border and shipping them by air back to the southern provinces, and
in Mexico,
turning in Mexico. And that is the kind of diplomacy that, if you put it in conjunction with these repatriation flights from the U.S., would end this border crisis immediately. It would just be over tomorrow. The whole thing would be over.
And I guess this is really the key takeaway, isn't it? That the policies that the Trump administration pursued and that the Biden administration from its first days dismantled can, in fact, make our border, if not completely secure, certainly vastly more secure. Todd, is it too late now that we've admitted this many people to be adjusting in that fashion? Or is the prospect that we will face quite possibly millions of additional people coming here something that justifies the most urgent reversal, of course, not just with respect to Mexico, as you've suggested, but writ large, including, you know, finishing the construction of the wall that Donald Trump made substantial progress on?
I mean, I'm just extremely skeptical and cynical that this administration will carry forward any of the policies that they used on the camp to the rest of the border. They fear their left wing. The problem was that this 15,000 was visible under the bridge. You could drive over that bridge and just see them, you know, into the horizon down there. And that's why they closed the bridge, by the way. And
barred drones from operating there. I think you were the guy who brought the eyes on, you know, insights that were so desperately needed.
Yes, I was. I don't see, I mean, all that matters to this administration is to get rid of the visible canker sore before the prom, you know, which the prom is going to be the midterms. So, you know, that's all they cared about. And now everybody's gone home, and those 50,000 a week are still coming. And all of those Haitians, by the way, who fled into Mexico, many of them told me directly that they're just simply waiting for Biden to get rid of his repatriation by error policy, and they'll be right back in. And they will.
This is so depressing. It really is. And I know
I'm so sorry.
But I know it must depress you as somebody who really understands it doesn't have to be this way. And the fact that it is this way is so you know, clearly something to be put at the feet of Joe Biden and his team. And I think there will be accountability in due course. So much food for thought. I know you'll keep up the great work you do at CIS.org, Center for Immigration Studies. And I hope that you will take a look, folks, if you haven't already done so, at Todd's terrific book, America's Covert Border War. We'll talk with you again very soon, Todd. Next up, Bob Carlstrom joins us. We'll take stock of what's happening to our economy and what it will mean for you right after this. This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Joint Chiefs Chairman Mark Milley has informed Congress that it's, quote, too early to tell, unquote, whether the American people are safer as a result of the humiliating strategic defeat in Afghanistan that Joe Biden engineered with his help. He says, we'll know in 6 months. Those statements aren't simply wrong, they're delusional. The Biden bug out of Afghanistan has created a terrorist superstate in which domestic and foreign Sharia supremacists enjoy a sanctuary to engage in jihad worldwide. They obtained an immense arsenal, are murdering their opponents with impunity, and are emboldened to do the same to the rest of us. In short, we're in far greater danger than we were prior to Biden's presidency, let alone his Afghan surrender. And the only thing that will be even more clear in 6 months is that General Milley cannot safely be in charge of anything. This is Frank Gaffney.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
We're back, and I'm very pleased to say we're joined for, I think, the first time, certainly for the first time in a long while, with our guest, Bob Carlstrom, who is an old friend, a colleague from the Reagan administration, in which he served with me, I guess one might say, among many others, in senior positions in the Office of Management and Budget. He is a highly skilled political operative with experience in campaigns at the presidential, gubernatorial, and congressional levels. And he is a very, very important figure, I think, in the current national firmament, the political side, that at least, with his role at AMAC Action, Inc. That is, of course, the 501c4 arm of a terrific organization, the Association for Mature American Citizens. We often hear from his colleague there, Robert Charles, and we're always pleased to be able to speak highly about what I think is a really important organization. And Bob, thank you for the work you do there. Thank you for what you do for all of us. Thank you for what you have been doing for a long time for our country. It's good to have you with us, sir.
Well, thank you, Frank, and it's good to be with you.
I kind of wanted to start with a sort of level setting, if you will, the 30,000-foot level. You've written recently, I believe, at AMAC's website, amac.us, about an unholy trinity that seems to be an important catalyst for what I think of as a kind of Marxist revolution that is underway in our country at the moment. Talk about the three parts of this unholy trinity, Bob, and the role they're playing.
I will, and thank you very much, Frank. The unholy trinity consists of the big dark money guys, the political leaders, and including those that are both elected and holding high office, as well as their financial backers. And the third group is the big tech media. And basically, this is how the scenario goes. We have individuals like George Soros, among others, who are pumping and laundering a lot of different money into various different organizations. So by the time it emerges, perhaps two or three times down the line, it winds up in active organizations that are sowing discontent. For example, the Movement for Black Lives is one that is funded indirectly through Soros. It is the funding source for the Black Lives Matter movement. And what they've done in the context of that is develop this type of progression. First, the Black Lives Matter demonstrations and that, and taking advantage of sincere people who are quite concerned or have concerns that way. The next step in that was defund the police. The third step in that plan was to essentially go after the Second Amendment and ban guns and gun control. The fourth one was the cancel culture. And now the fifth one, and the big enchilada, is called critical race theory, which is an effort to divide and conquer. And that has its origins, if you will, in Marxism and Leninism, where they've substituted race for the working class or the proletariat. And so that's just one example of it. Also, the Soros money winds up in something called Act Blue, which is developed during the Clinton years as its means to fund liberal Democrat candidates for office at all levels of government. The second part of the Trinity takes you to the political bosses. First, clearly, the Nancy Pelosi, the Chuck Schumer, and the Biden people, and those that are behind them. And what they do is foster election or legislation that will place them in one-party control and federalize, for example, all elections, which is what they proposed in H.R. 1 and S.1 and even H.R. 4, where they cloak that under the civil rights statute, which is just a sham. And the purpose of that, again, is to create federal control over all elections and really squash the states. And the states are the primary unit of government that we have for elections. And so this is an effort by the federal government, by the Democrats, to take control and to really establish a one-party system.
Yeah, permanently.
And the third element of the, exactly. And the third element of that that unholy trinity are big media, big tech media, in which they engage in media suppression, you know, of conservative voices. And what they're doing is they're placating and are very much a part of the power game in terms of molding, you know, the mindset of the American people. For example, what they did to Donald Trump is essentially paint him like Darth Vader incarnate. And consequently, and they've been very selective in reporting the news, their philosophy really is, we want you to know the news as we want you to know the news. And so, and as we define it. And so that unholy trinity moves forward into an area called what I term as useful idiots. Again, that is a transition directly from Lenin and Marx. And it was used actually by the Soviet Union during the Cold War, where they enlisted people who were reform-minded, who really weren't that cognizant or aware or learned, let's say, in the specific issues, and fostered their demonstrations, which we saw a lot of through the years, against the government. And the useful idiots reincarnate themselves or exist, if you will, both in terms of the activists funded by Soros. They occur in the Congress and in the Democrat movement, where good people, middle of the road people, even on the Democrat side, follow the leadership of the unholy trinity in the political realm. And then you have those in the media who also follow the will of their employers in terms of stacking and biasing the news. And they do that. And so what they've developed there are useful idiots, you know, in terms of, you know, the old Soviet approach. So this is a very, very serious problem. And all these actions that have been occurring are coordinated efforts. You know, they're not in a silo. And that's the large danger that this unholy trinity has presented to the United States and the American people.
Yeah, I think this is a brilliant analysis. And what we're looking at, unfortunately, has not only the sort of domestic enemies or enemies within, if you will, features that you've just laid out so well, but of course it's got an overlay of people outside of our country, and I think preeminently the Chinese Communist Party is among them, who are, you know, reinforcing or in some cases, I think, helping financially or otherwise these various components of the unholy trinity to greatly intensify the danger that we're facing, a danger that has been euphemistically described as fundamentally transforming America, but I think it really amounts to taking it down. Which brings me to another sort of line of attack that is at work at the moment, and I'd like to hearken back to your experience as an old green eyeshade guy at the Office of Management and Budget. Talk a little bit about the implications for our country Bob Carstrom, of having the Congress, it seems rather blithely, talking about putting $3.5 trillion towards a host of mostly domestic radical left policy agenda items. What are the consequences of that for our economy, well, our children for that matter, and the future debt of this nation? Is it remotely prudent, let alone sustainable?
It's not sustainable, Frank, and it's a very serious problem. And the Congress for decades and the executive branch have been very, very irresponsible in spending. And this Congress goes beyond the pale. The national debt is a very serious thing. The deficits that we're incurring, exceed the GDP each year, and that's very serious. And so we're becoming a debt-ridden nation, for example. And there's a very serious accounting game that's being played. The Social Security Trust Fund, for example, has loaned $3.1 trillion to the United States government. Well, and that is secured by Treasury notes. And so that's an accounting game. But where all this leads is to ultimately inflation and the devaluation of the currency. For example, on a constant dollar basis, the dollar today is worth 15 cents of what it was worth in 1972. It's worth 65 cents today of what it was in the year 2010. So when you have the erosion of the value of the dollar against all of this spending that's being proposed, this is absolutely ludicrous and irresponsible. You're going to have continued inflation and continued reduction in the value of the dollar. And that hits people hard, particularly in the middle and lower income areas, because they don't have that extra change to spare. But more seriously, and this is where it goes back to the unholy trinity and people like George Soros. And remember, George Soros made a lot of money in devaluating national currencies. He did that in playing with the British pound sterling and made $1 billion or more in doing that. Well, when you link all these things together, and if we end up with the devaluation of the currency to such a point where it ceases to be the international reserve currency, if you will, then the speculators like George Soros can hop in again and essentially bring it down and enrich themselves at a great cost to the American people and our financial stature. And there you go for George Soros, if that's his plan, because you have to follow the money. Why would a man like that want to do all that he's doing? And I would dare suspect that he would like to see the devaluation of our currency so that he can really win, in terms of our currency, which would be the big enchilada in that type of strategy.
I tend to think personally that it has more to do with his own interest in fundamentally transforming the United States. And, he's recently gone after Xi Jinping in China, interested in your thoughts, if you have any, on why he's doing that. Some suggest it's just a money play, again, that he's betting short on China at the moment.
It could well be.
Yeah. But whatever it is, it's not on the up and up. And my concern is that while we may agree that we should not be underwriting China with our capital markets, we may have very different reasons for doing so. And his are, I think, as always, nefarious. Bob, let me get to one other thing before we have to let you go. And that is much of this spending that would, I think, destroy, as you say, our currency as well as our children's future is focused on financing Green New Deal transformations of that sort of sector of our economy, transportation, energy, and the like. What are your thoughts? And as you represent your folks in the Association of Mature American Citizens, what do you think they make of these notions popularized by, of course, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez?
Well, they oppose. what they're trying to do. The Green New Deal is an example of an effort to really subsidize, for example, the green industry, which should make its own way, just like every other industry has done in terms of our capitalism and free market system. And moreover, you know, the effort to ban or reduce fossil fuels dependency makes absolutely no sense, because the effect of that would really, really kill our basic, our primary industrial base. For example, can you imagine manufacturing steel on a wind turbine or a solar system? Can't do it. And consequently, you know, part of that is reflects their kowtowing to the environmentalists that want to transform, again, our country into a service-based economy, which is nonsense, which is like the Japanese really struggle with all the time. Certainly, you know, President Trump was trying to restore our industrial strength, which is absolutely important, because it's the cost of energy and our industrial strength is the foundation in terms of why America, you know, is that shining city on the hill and help sustain us. And what they're trying to do in these kinds of things is destroy that stature. It reminds me of Obama, you know, when he said we're not exceptional. Well, we are an exceptional country. And that's why opposition by the American people to these efforts is so critical.
You know, as you're speaking about this, Bob, the combined effect of having the Green New Deal transform our energy sector to eliminate coal, to eliminate natural gas as contributors to what's called the base load power production for the grid, which is essential to its performance. You cannot rely on the wind that sometimes doesn't blow or the sun that sometimes doesn't shine. And they certainly don't seem to be all that keen on, you know, building additional dams or new nuclear power plants, the last time I checked. So that basically entails reducing our productive capacity in those regards. And what does that mean, especially at a time when they are telling us that we need to electrify even more, notably our transportation sector, and depend even more on China, of all things, for all of the components, the batteries and the chips and so on that will be required to make that work. It seems as though this is the most ill-conceived and reckless effort I can imagine to, well, again, take down our country. And Bob Carlson, I'm so appreciative of what you do at AMAC Action, Inc. to arouse those who are both members of your organization and those who follow you and its work to understand the true nature of what we're up against in this country and to come together to try to protect our freedoms, to protect our economy, to protect our beloved nation. And I trust you will keep it up, and I hope you will come back to us again soon with updates on all of this. But thank you for your time today. Keep up the good work, my friend, and we'll talk again soon.
Frank, wonderful to be with you, and I look forward to talking with you again.
Thank you. We look forward to talking to the rest of you again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.